Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
49, Mike. We're almost at half of 100. Technically, we are over 50 episodes because of the bonus shows, but we count the full episodes that we do in studio, obviously, as the numbered episodes. Because if you look on like Apple Podcasts and all the lists, like the number's actually higher because of the bonus episodes.
A little off, I guess. A little off.
So it's a little off.
But all of
high quality. Top class podcast. Thanks again, guys, for listening to the Last Round Podcast. I'm Danny Z with my co-host right across from me, Michael Shepherd, episode 49. It wasn't that crazy of a weekend in terms of fights this past weekend, right? There was some news, obviously, in the last week. Canelo Kovalev officially announced. They had a presser out here in L.A.,
Ryan Garcia
news, you know, was that a conspiracy? We got to touch on that, you know. But the moment of the week, that's right, he's back. And he's going for that pound-for-pound number one spot. That's right. El Perro Alfredo Angulo gets the split decision win over Kid Chocolate Peter Quillin. All right, who saw this coming?
Not me and you.
Who saw this coming?
Abel Sanchez, maybe?
Man, did you see him? Did you see Abel Sanchez in the back when they were announcing the decision? And he was just kind of like sitting, like obviously standing there waiting for the decision. And as soon as they announced Angulo's name as the winner, you could see like in his face, he's like, oh my God, it really happened. Like he's like clapping. Like you could see even he was surprised.
It was a sloppy fight, wasn't it?
It was.
Two faded fighters, really. And I think everyone going in there thought Peter Quillin was going to be the fresher guy.
Well, you know, on paper, he should have been.
He kind of was to begin with. I think through the first sort of like 6-7 rounds, I think he'd thrown almost double the amount of punches that Angulo did. You know, really, Angulo just kind of walked him down. And I think either Quillin either underestimated us or, you know, that old phrase, he just grew old in front of us in the ring.
That's
that
true.
Night. So, I think both of them, really, if they're going to fight again, you know, Angulo should be fighting more of those, you know, faded, you know, people around his own age than, you know, sticking him in there with a live underdog that someone's just going to crush. But, you know, that could very well happen. You know, they just give him a good payday. Someone young goes in there. It's another name for their resume. But after the fight, Caleb Truax called him out because the original fight was supposed to be Caleb Truax, Peter Quillin, if I remember rightly.
It was.
So it would make sense, you know, stick Angulo in there, who stood in and, you know, performed on the night, came out with the W, stick him in there with Caleb Truax.
So, as I mentioned, Angulo gets the split decision 10-round victory over Peter Quillin by scores of 97-93, 96-94, and 94-96. And this was this past Saturday from the Rabobank Theater in Bakersfield on Fox Sports 1. Angulo's 37. Quillin's 36? I didn't think he was out at 36. Really? I thought he was like 33, maybe.
Well, he took like 4 years off, didn't he? And was just...
That's true.
Uncle Al just gave him a sweet
after night. After that Jacobs win, I mean, after that Jacobs loss, man, I don't think he's ever been the same.
I don't think he's ever been the same since Uncle Al paid him not to fight, was it Korobov?
Oh, Matt Korobov?
Yeah, he was the challenger and, you know, he told him not to fight. Gave him something like $750,000, I believe, not to fight him. So he just went off into the sunset for a while and just, you know, was living life how he should do. And then just came back, and I don't think he's ever been the same.
I think it's crazy that for this fight, CompuBox had Quillin connecting on 291 of 694 total punches, 42%, and 152 of 350 for his power punches. That's a lot. That's a high connect percentage rate.
for someone that lost as well.
Exactly. If you showed me this, or any, I guess sophisticated boxing fan, if you showed him these statistics, you would think, oh, that guy most likely won, right?
Yeah, you would have thought so. You know, Angulo really doesn't throw a lot and was kind of just very slow in his footwork, just plodding around the wing, trying to, cut it off for Quinlan. And at times, actually, in the late rounds, I think it was round 8, round 9 maybe, he actually connected quite well with Quinlan and had him kind of looked a little bit out on his feet, but he was just that old and his work rate was so slow that he couldn't really take advantage of that, get in there, and get Quinlan out of the ring. And, a KO would have looked so good at this age against someone of Quinlan's, resume. Even though he looked faded, it would have been good, jumps in there onto maybe a bigger fight.
But I'm glad, it's in fights like these, obviously, people were overlooking this fight. Like Angulo's obviously on the older side and been around for a while. People thought, his gas tank was essentially empty. So, obviously the betting odds, if any, were for Quillen in this fight. But it's situations like these when the opposite happens of what people are expecting that garners attention and creates a topic of conversation. I mean, would people really be talking about this if Quillen... Yeah, I mean, obviously boxing fans and the boxing media would still be talking about it, but if Quillen beat him by unanimous decision or even knocked him out, especially if he knocked Angulo out, people would be saying, oh yeah, Angulo just needs to stop, he needs to retire, he needs to stop, It'd be that type of narrative. But I think him winning, even if it was a split decision, is the bigger story out of any possible outcome. Because I mean, who honestly would have? I'm still surprised that he won.
And who even knew they were fighting?
Exactly.
There was no promotion really about that card held in Bakersfield.
I mean, obviously, there wasn't. It wasn't on the level of like a Spence Porter.
No.
I mean, you didn't see Angulo like on the NFL Sunday broadcast at Dallas Cowboys Stadium, right? They're coming out with Jerry Jones, like Alfredo Angulo fights in Bakersfield this Saturday. You know what I mean? Like Errol Spence.
Yeah, because if he'd have lost, that would have been his 8th loss, and then everyone would have just been like, well, Quinlan should have won. He just did what we kind of expected, and
yeah, exactly.
Onwards to his next fight, which probably would have been Caleb Truax, because he was the original opponent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you throw a wrench into it, like you said, mentioned Caleb Truax, who they wanted to match up Quinlan against Truax, hopefully in the following fight or something like that. And obviously it didn't work. Angulo spoiled those plans. I haven't got a chance to see any interviews with Abel Sanchez because, like you said, Abel Sanchez trains Angulo. And I know Angulo was, I think he posted something shortly after thanking Abel Sanchez, saying, hey, we did it. Like, man, I'm telling you, I really want to know what Abel Sanchez thinks. And I'm sure there's already interviews out there. I just haven't seen them. But because I'm still baffled that he got the win. It's crazy. It's crazy.
He got a lot of praise on Twitter.
He did.
Abel Sanchez, just sort of saying, like people had written him off because of kind of the abuse he kind of got from, the separation from Triple G, and then other people leaving camp. Andy Ruiz been another one who left camp.
I don't think, kind of sidetracking on the Abel Sanchez thing, that just because like he lost like a big fighter like Triple G, and he also lost, who else did he lose?
Ruiz left.
Who used to train with Abel Sanchez?
Yeah, he was
up there. That was a while ago.
That was a while ago, but he was up
there.
I really
don't count that. But, I mean, obviously he lost, a couple different fighters and lost his biggest one in Triple G. But I never thought, I think people saying that Abel Sanchez lost it, he wasn't he's not the same trainer anymore, he doesn't have it. I think that was a false narrative. It doesn't mean he sucks. Like, he's still talented. He can still train world champions. And then people saying like, oh, Abel Sanchez still got it because he got Angulo to win. Like he trained Angulo like good enough to win. Like, no, like I don't think he ever lost it. He's still a good trainer. Like, it's not, I don't think, like, I mean, reportedly the whole Triple G situation wasn't really about like training techniques. It was about money. And obviously Triple G leaving and them splitting apart, they kind of talk smack about each other, saying, oh yeah, I never trained like this. Now that I'm training with Jonathan Banks, I don't know why I never trained like this. I think it's a, I, I think it was a cool moment for Angulo, getting the W. You know, like, I mean, obviously he's gonna fight again. They're gonna offer money to find Caleb Truax. He's gonna make a bigger paycheck. But man, honestly, if I was him, I'd be like, man, I'm gonna retire now. I'm cool, going off on top. You know, like, I don't know, but you could tell that he was really happy in that moment when he got his hand raised and his name announced, which was cool to see. So I'm telling you, man, I'm at a loss for words here. I can't believe in 2019, almost 2020, we're talking about Alfredo Angulo, El Perro Angulo, getting the W over, I mean, I know Peter Quillin hasn't been the same for the last couple of years, but I don't know, man. I have nothing else to say about that because I don't know what to say.
Onwards and upwards for Angulo.
Anyway, he's coming for that pound-for-pound number one spot. In this crazy world that we call boxing, Angulo could win his next 10 fights, beat all these contenders, crack the pound-for-pound top five. Who knows? Crazier things have happened.
As long as he fights, you know, people, like I touched on, like in and around his age, you don't want to be throwing him in there with some live dogs, just getting him knocked out.
You never know, man. This could be a big confidence booster. I mean, what was this, a middleweight fight, right? Was it 160?
I think so.
I mean, you never know. He's like, hey, give me another shot at Canelo again. Let's do it. You know, All-Mexican showdown. Estadio Azteca in Mexico, 120,000 people. You never know. Canelo Angulo, the rematch. Hey, I threw it out there, so if it happens again, highly unlikely, but who knows, man? Who knows? So, what else did we have on that day? Oh, was this a co-main? Thomas Delorme gets the 10-round unanimous decision over Terrell Williams. Puerto Rico's Delorme, 29 years old, was once a hot prospect before being stopped by Carlos Abregu back in... Is it Abregu or I thought it was Abreu? I just always assumed it was Abreu, but I guess not. That was in 2012. Did you get a chance to watch that fight, Delorme? I saw some stuff on Twitter about it, but I didn't actually catch it. Did you get a chance to catch that fight, the Delorme Williams fight, 10 round?
Yeah, I saw the highlights.
Anything that stood out to you?
I thought Delorme looked well. I think he's kind of had a rough patch, you know, because obviously he got jobbed really against Jesse Vargas in October 2018.
Yeah.
I don't know, nothing of note, really. I thought it was a hard-fought fight. Just didn't really quite happen for...
Didn't really stand out too crazy.
No,
exactly. Delorme did fight Terrence Crawford in 2015. And Ugas, Jordanis Ugas, who just lost a hard-fought decision to Sean Porter out here in L.A. at the StubHub Center. So he's been in there with some names. And then before this fight, he was in a draw with Jesse Vargas. Jesse, the new generation Vargas. Do you remember that when Jesse Vargas first started, he fought under Mayweather Promotions? His nickname was the new generation. And then after that, like, no more nickname. He should have just kept the new generation. Imagine he kept the new generation for, like, the whole career, and people are like, hey man, you're a veteran, you've been fighting for 15 years. He's like, I'm still a new generation.
When they call himself like Pretty Boy or the Heartbreak Kid, and they're still in the 30s.
This fight was at welterweight, 147 pounds. Williams is a 35-year-old who was hoping to have sort of a late surge into being a serious contender. But obviously, at least for this fight, didn't happen. I mean, at 35 years old, I mean, you know, the previous fight we just talked about, Angulo's 37. There could still be moments ahead where they can get that stardom again. Who knows? Also on that card, Chris, is it Colbert or Colbert?
Colbert. That's Colbert, the way I would say it.
Because I'm talking about the late night host over here in the United States. What is it? Late night. Stephen Colbert. He spells it the same, but he pronounces it Colbert.
It's all Showtime.
Or Colbert. Chris Colbert remains undefeated with the first round knockout of Miguel Beltran Jr. Colbert was on the Netflix series Counterpunch. Did you ever catch that?
I did. I thought it was a good series. Enjoyed it.
Really?
If you haven't, if you watch that fight and you haven't watched Counterpunch, watch it. It goes back and shows you kind of the amateur system, shows you Colbert coming through. And on that, his nickname at that point was Little B-Hop.
Oh, really?
Because he loved Bernard Hopkins, but he's now changed it to Chris Showtime Colbert.
Showtime, huh? So, I wonder what Sean Porter thinks about that.
I think Little B-Hop would have been better because he would have got more attention because he's kind of modeled himself on a legendary status of Bernard Hopkins.
True. That's true. So now we got two Showtime. Showtime Sean Porter and Showtime Chris Colbert.
Showtime Mike Shepard.
Colbert did do, obviously he did well. It's his fifth KO in 13 fights now. He did flash his speed in that opening frame, obviously. He's got fast hands. He does got fast hands. And he did crack Beltran with a shot near the ear and a right hand that put Beltran face first down on the canvas, ending the fight clean and clear. First round knockout.
You always know. When they go face first, you're like, it's over.
Aren't those always the most exciting ones, though? Like the knockouts in the first round. It's like, whoa, I didn't expect this. I was trying to get ready for a whole 12 rounds or a whole 10 rounds. You just threw it out of nowhere. Colbert, I keep wanting to say Colbert. It's not Colbert. 22 years old from Brooklyn. Hey, man, Brooklyn produces a lot of fighters, man. 22 years old. He's still got a lot left, obviously, in his career. At 13-0, 5 KOs. I mean, how many times has he fought this year? Do we have that?
I'm not too sure for this year, but he's taken off, and he's one of those fighters as well. Who I think knows that you need to be kind of the whole package. You know, that's why he calls himself Showtime. You know, he's flashy, does a little celebration, talks quite well. So I think if they just bleed him through, keep him coming through the undercard, give him lots of different styles, I think he could be one to watch.
Chris Colbert, 22 years old, he still has a lot of time left in his career, a lot. So congratulations to him, 13-0, 5 KOs. Moving on. Also this past Saturday from Mexicali in Baja California, Mexico, Joseph Diaz Jr. gets the 30th win of his career as he gets the majority decision win over Jesus Cuadros. Cuadro? I think it was Cuadro. Are we missing an S there? I don't know. Majority decision. Okay, before we dive into the details, majority decision?
I didn't think he looked too good. I don't think he was looking for a big fight, he should have really have gone in there and made a statement and spin, you know, knocked him out, then stood there and made an announcement, you know, like, hey, Tevin Farmer, let's go, something like that, instead of a majority decision against an opponent nobody knows.
I mean,
Baja California.
I mean, do you think, like, I know people say it, you know, for fights and stuff, especially when somebody's trying to entice another fighter to get in the ring with them, like, people say, like, conspiracy theories, like, oh, yeah, they fought. Like, he purposely fought like that to try to entice so-and-so to take the fight with him. Because if he would have knocked him out, like, somebody, like, the last Golden Boy card right here in Carson, when Romero Duno fought, who's fighting Ryan Garcia on the Canelo Kovalev undercard in November, Duno got the unanimous decision win on that Saturday on DAZN, but he didn't knock him out like he, you know, he didn't look too dominant. There was somebody who I was having a conversation with who said, he's like, I don't know. He's like, what if he purposely fought like that to try to entice Ryan to take the fight with him? He's like, what if Duno knocked this guy out? And Ryan was like, oh, I'm not going to fight you yet. You know, do you think maybe, because obviously everybody knows, every boxing fan knows that Diaz has had a tough time landing a big fight. Ever since his loss to Gary Russell Jr., he's had a tough time getting these big names. I mean, what do you think?
I think it's, I don't know about the conspiracy theory. I can see why people say that, you know, because if he goes in there and blows out Jesus Cuadro, you know, then Tevin Farmer might think twice about fighting him, being like, I don't know whether I need it, you know, but to me personally, I think he should have. You know, it's not his fault. Maybe he just chose the wrong opponent on that time. Jesus Cuadro did look a little bit tricky, you know, kind of knew what he was doing in there. But the thing, the problem that Diaz has is every time I watch him, I always think technically he's very, very good.
No, he's technically he's good. He's got great fundamentals.
But he just doesn't have that pop in his jab.
You know what's
or anything.
What's crazy is that like when he gives you the punches, like when he's punching, like there is power behind his punches, but for some reason it's not like that extra step.
It's not that one where you look at it and it's like, hey, back the fuck up. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
He doesn't flash a jab out there that connects and then someone's kind of like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
And
but you're right though, he's got good boxing ability. He's got great fundamentals.
Oh. If he had some power behind him, his boxing fundamentals, he does everything very well.
Yeah.
You know, he mixes it up. He's got good footwork, just everything. But he just doesn't seem to have any power or any flashes of brilliance or, you know, like he doesn't jump on the opponent when you kind of think like, oh, he's caught him. He looked a little bit out on his feet.
Yeah.
You know, he's just happy to go through the motions, you know, pick up rounds and then just win decisions.
Yeah, but, like when he fought Gary Russell in Maryland, mm-hmm. That was on Showtime, I think. Even though Gary Russell did beat him, did decision him, I mean, obviously Russell was the faster fighter. I mean, Russell's faster than a lot of guys in that division, especially. Diaz was still getting in some good shots. He was still, his body work was obviously better than Russell's on that night. It's just, Russell was just too fast and was connecting more because of his speed. But Diaz still fought well as he could have, you know, in trying to adapt to Russell's hand speed. But you're right, though, in terms of, like, that power, like, it, when you watch him, you see, like, okay, you know, he's got, those punches hurt, but, like, he for some reason, he doesn't have that next level power that, like you said, like, back up. I mean, like, you know, did he take it easy on this guy? Did he take this guy for granted? Because he's trying to entice a Tevin Farmer or something like that. I mean, the Tevin Farmer fight can obviously be made because they're both under the zone, you know? So, I mean, honestly, like, I'd rather see Diaz-Farmer, I'd rather see Diaz-Farmer as the co-main for Canelo Kovalev. But I guarantee you, because Farmer is technically a matchroom fighter and Diaz is obviously a Golden Boy fighter, even though they do fight under the same network as the zone, which is obviously makes it easier to make, they still have two different promoters. Do you think that if they were both under the same promoter, let's just say Golden Boy or Matchroom, let's just say they were Golden Boy. Let's just say Tevin Farmer was a Golden Boy fighter as well as Diaz. Would that be a co-main Canelo Kovalev for the title?
I think it could be because I think that since they're both under the zone, you know, it's kind of like, okay, you loan me this fighter, then we'll borrow another fighter later down the line.
Right. You know? No, yeah. And in an ideal world, that would be great. But I think because Eddie Hearn promotes Tevin Farmer, Oscar De La Hoya promotes Joseph Diaz. Yeah, I mean, DAZN is probably, like, who cares? They both fight on DAZN. Just put them on the card, you know? Give them the exposure. But, I mean, is that fight going to be its own main event? Its own DAZN broadcast?
It could be. You know, they've got that many dates now that we've got boxing nearly every weekend.
Well, that's why.
That something like that could be, you know, just, it's obviously not going to be a pay-per-view that they could do. And then it's hard to tell, you know, because I don't know the popularity. I don't think really Jojo Diaz is that popular. Tevin Farmer's, I don't think that popular. So,
well, they're not. Like, hardcore boxing fans know who they are, obviously. I mean, like, I think if you'd ask them, they would obviously admit that as well.
It's an intriguing fight and one I'd like to see because of the social media back and forth on Twitter.
Well, they did call each other out, or Diaz, or there was some Twitter beef back and forth after this fight,
mm-hmm.
where they called each other out and, like, saying, hey, you know, they tagged Golden Boy Oscar, Eric Gomez, like, hey, make this fight. Let's make this fight. And I think they all responded to each other saying, let's do it. So I don't see why that fight doesn't happen next for both of them. I don't see why I wouldn't. I really don't. Now, the question is it its own main event, its own DAZN broadcast, or is it part of a larger card as like a co-main?
I think if it's a larger card, it's going to be I don't even know whether you'd call it a co-main. I don't know whether it's big enough to be a co-main for Canelo Kovalev.
It'd be a world title fight.
So we'll see. It's definitely an intriguing fight.
I'd rather see that. Like, if for some reason they announced that fight.
Well, Ryan Garcia is going to be co-main.
I know. But it should, if that fight obviously gets added to the Canelo Kovalev card, that should be the co-main, regardless if Garcia is a more popular fighter. I mean, it's not, that's a world title fight. These guys are.
But what, the 3 million Instagram followers is more important?
I understand that, but like, I don't know.
He's got 3 million Instagram followers.
Technically, Diaz and Ryan Garcia kind of fight at similar weight class.
Did you not hear me? He has 3 million Instagram followers.
I understand that, Mike. I heard you. All right. I'm about to cut this audio off right now. We're about to end the show right now. But I mean, technically Diaz fights at what, 130?
Mm-hmm, he moved up, yeah.
And Ryan just moved up to 135. I mean, man, if I was Joseph Diaz, I would be telling Oscar, hey, give me Ryan.
Well,
let me fight Ryan.
He can have the scraps after Duno's dealt with him.
We'll touch on that later. The announcement. Canelo Kovalev and obviously the co-main Duno Garcia. Where's the Garcia Duno? People care about that. So like I said, I think Farmer Diaz happens next for Farmer's world title. I think the zone is obviously going to tell Eddie Hearn and Oscar De La Hoya, hey, put them both together. You know, stop waiting. Let's put them both together and see what happens. And then quick prediction, who wins that?
I think Tevin Farmer. I think it's the same problem that Diaz doesn't have the power to back him up, and I think Farmer eventually just gets used to the Jojo Diaz's style, and I think eventually he'll work him out, and I think over 12 rounds he'll take it. The problem is with those two, neither of them really have much pop, so I think it's going to be a 12-round fight.
Probably. Gancio's right there too, and he's a Golden Boy fighter. So Diaz beat him in 2016.
Well, he's scheduled to come back...
November.
November against Alvarado?
Yeah, Rene Alvarado out here in Fantasy Springs in Indio, California, the Coachella Valley. So we'll see about that, but Farmer Diaz has to happen next for both of them. Like and obviously the zone wants it. So that should happen next. There's no reason for them not to go against each other. All right. So this Saturday from the Staples Center in downtown Los Angeles on Fox Pay-Per-View on the undercard is actually the co-main event of the Sean Porter and Errol Spence unification matchup. The co-main event between Anthony Durrell, who holds the WBC super middleweight title, is going up against David El Bandera Roja Benavidez, who's actually on the line right now to speak to us here at the last round. Thanks for jumping on, David. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys for taking the time out, for reaching out and giving me this interview. I'm just very excited. September 28th is going to be a big day in my career, and also my life. I got a lot of people supporting me. Feels like I'm fighting in my backyard in Los Angeles, California at the Staples Center. So it's like a dream come true fighting there. I've always wanted to fight there my whole life. So, I'm basically looking to steal the show and getting my world title back.
You're looking to become the youngest two-time world champion in the super middleweight history?
Yes, sir. So it's a big deal for me. There's a lot to be. If I win this title, there's going to be a lot. I'm going to be in the history books again, also back in the mix, becoming a champion. Anthony Durrell is a great fighter and he's never been knocked out. So, I'm looking forward to being the first person to knock Anthony Durrell out. I know I'm going to hurt him. I don't know what round it's going to be or what it's going to be with, but I know I'm going to hurt him.
David, you sparred Sean Porter, for this camp, obviously, and obviously it got a lot of attention because Porter is fighting Spence on the same card and everything, and obviously you're the physically bigger fighter than Porter, even though Porter, when he was younger, he fought the bigger guys. I think he fought Usyk when he was younger and stuff like that, so he's fought bigger guys. Speaking on that, what did you take from that fighting, obviously one of the best welterweights in the world out here in L.A.? What did you take from that sparring session?
Sparring Sean Porter, it was a great experience. Obviously, he doesn't have the style that the person I'm fighting has or has the height. But, Sean Porter is a champion for a reason. And every time I get the opportunity to spar another champion, I'm more than willingly to take it. Sean Porter is a great fighter and he has a lot of things that he does really good. He puts pressure really good and he has amazing body shots and then he has good overhand right. So, I got a lot out of the sparring. You know, I wasn't gonna try to brawl with him as well, but I was using more of my boxing skills. You know, stopping him with the jab when he comes in. You know, going around the ring. So you know, I feel like we both walked away with something that we both learned from the sparring session. But in reality, it didn't really help either of us. You know, get ready for our fights. It was just more of like a media stunt, you know, but we both, you know, we both respect each other, and it's always a good time to spar another champion.
Speaking of sparring, you know, world champion fighters, in addition to Sean Porter, I'm going to name some names that we learned that you've sparred before in the past, and you let me know, you know, which one stands out more. So you've sparred Triple G, Kelly Pavlik, Gabe Rosado, Dimitri Bivol, Zurdo Ramirez. Are we right in all those?
Yeah, I've sparred all of them. The one that really stands out the most to me is, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again, it's always going to be Gennady Golovkin. Because, yeah, I sparred him when I was younger. I sparred him when I was 19. You know, I sparred him from 16 all the way up until 19 or 20. So I learned a lot from Gennady Golovkin. He has a lot of tools. You know, he has a lot of tricks in his hat. You know, he knows how to do a lot of stuff. He has so much experience. So I feel like that was the perfect time to spar him, you know, when I was getting older, because he just taught me so much, you know, ring generalship, how to use defense with great power punches like that. And also he taught me a lot, you know, how to think, how to set shots up, you know. But all those other fighters I've sparred, you know, they're all great. They're all great fighters. They're all really good. They're all really, all of them are really good, basically. You know, so it was a pleasure to spar all of them.
Did you spar, and I don't know if this is true or not, because we were researching, you know, your history before, but did you spar Chocolatito as well?
Not Chocolatito, I sparred Kid Chocolate.
Kid Chocolate, okay, because there was something that we read that I think they wrote Chocolatito, that you sparred him, but I was like, no, that's wrong.
Way too small.
Okay,
that's what we said.
We wanted to clarify that because there was something that we read and it said that. So I was like, I know there's no way there's no way he said
maybe in a running race he raced him.
Yeah, yeah, no, that never happened. It was Kid Chocolate.
It was Kid Chocolate. Speaking of Kid Chocolate, what'd you think of this past Saturday? You know, Angulo obviously got the split decision win over him. What'd you think about that when you learned about that decision?
It was a really good fight. You know, it was something a lot of fans didn't expect. Something a lot of fans didn't expect. You know, I thought Kid Chocolate was going to knock him out, you know, in the early rounds. But, you know, Angulo showed a lot of heart. You know, he's been working with Abel Sanchez. So I've trained a lot of times up there in Big Bear. So I know exactly, you know, what type of condition he was in. But, you know, I just still feel like Kid Chocolate should have been able to put him away. But, you know, it's sad to say, but, you know, maybe, you know, Kid Chocolate should just hang him up. You know, he's not the fighter that he once was. But, you know, hats off to Angulo as well. You know, never giving up. You know, a lot of people counted Angulo out. You know, he just hasn't looked the same in, you know, his past performances. But, you know, I had heavily favored Kid Chocolate. But, you know, Angulo took the victory. But, you know, it was a good fight. It was a good fight for the fans.
Do you think that Jacobs, when he lost to Danny Jacobs a couple years ago, do you think that really, you know, affected him? Because it seems, at least to a lot of fans and a lot of media pundits, that Kid Chocolate's never really been the same type of fighter that he was before he fought Danny Jacobs.
I mean, I don't know. You mean he's his own person? You know, I can't speak for another person. You know, it seems like it. It seems like that's the case. You know, but a lot of people, they don't know. Can't really say, because sometimes a lot of people go through a lot of stuff in their life. You know, it's not just about the boxing. Sometimes he could have been going through something else. I know he took a lot of time off, and probably that affected him. And you know, he just took that fight at the wrong time. But I think it was maybe the thing that messed him up most was the inactivity, because he took a while off after he fought Jacob, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
And he's already a little bit older, so maybe it could have been that. But you know, I know Kid Chocolate, well, I've known him back then, you know, and I just wish nothing but the best from him. But, you know, I don't know, maybe he should get one more fight, and if it doesn't go his way, he should maybe hang him up. Because, you know, it just, he just doesn't look the same that he once did, because he was an animal back then when I used to spar with him a long time ago. So, you know, he doesn't really look the same anymore.
David, in my research, I saw that you sparred 16 rounds with four different guys. I think it was last week to adapt to four different styles.
Yeah, we did that. We did that 2 weeks in a row. For the last 2 weeks, you know, we're doing for the whole camp, we probably had like about 200 plus rounds in sparring. I can't even say because there was so much sparring. But, you know, because this the type of fight this is, you know, we got to put it all online and we got to be ready for anything. So, you know, I told my dad, you know, let's get four different fighters, you know, top line fighters, you know, and let's put them in 4-4-4. You know, another guy fresh, you know, fresh guys back to back. And, you know, all of them, they had a little bit different styles. Some of them were had a lot of speed. Some of them were power punches, you know what I mean? You know, I always had every fighter that that would spar that they put me in with, I had to reset my own style. And, you know, kind of adapt to theirs. I feel like this fight is that I'm meet my fans, and I'll definitely put on a show.
I also read that you, as you get older, you're looking to move up to light heavyweight and maybe even cruiserweight.
Yeah, maybe. You know, right now I'm just really focused on staying in the super middleweight. There's a lot of great fights to be made. Like, you know, there's basically, there's Callum Smith. You know, there's, who else is Billy Joe Sanders? Caleb Plant, obviously, he's there. You know, and then the person that, the fight that everybody wants, Canelo. So there's a lot of great fights to be made. I mean, I'm barely going to turn 23 this December. So, I mean, we still have a lot of time. You know, I make 168 fairly easy. So, you know, I'm gonna be at 168 for a while until we get all the fights we want to get, and then we'll look to move up to 175.
Without looking past Derella, you're still looking for the Caleb Plant fight. Just obviously, you had a bit of a beef with him.
Yeah, you know that's gonna be a great fight, and I feel like it'll get a lot of views because you know, obviously it's publicly known that we don't like each other. But at the end of the day, he's a great fighter. I'm a great fighter, so this just brings great fights to the sport of boxing, and I'm looking forward to that. You know, like I said, when I retire, when I hang them up, I want to look back at my career and say that I fought the best. I fought the best out of the best, and I beat everybody. So, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to getting all these great fights.
Would you like to go over to England to fight Callum Smith?
Yeah, man. I mean, if I feel like, you know, that's definitely one of my dreams, going out there to UK. You know, the fans are crazy about boxing. You know, they always, every time Joshua, you know, or any of the other guys fight, you know, they always sell out. You know, it's amazing numbers that they put up. So I'll definitely be glad to go up there.
So, David, speaking of Canelo, obviously it's officially announced that he's going to fight Sergey Kovalev. And Sergey Kovalev only fights at a division right above you, 175. What do you think about that? Because obviously that's a very intriguing matchup. You know, what do you think about that as a world champion that you are, and only pretty much at the same weight class that they both are?
I think it's going to be a great fight no matter what happens. You know, there's a lot of, you know, when both fighters have that type of power, you know, somebody's going to get hurt. And you don't really know who is, but, you know, Kovalev, like, the thing about Kovalev that people don't realize, before he got knocked out, he was a monster. You know, he wasn't just beating everybody. He was demolishing everybody. You know, so I feel like he got a little bit too comfortable, and that's why he got knocked out. But since he got his belt back, you know, I feel like, you know, he's rededicated himself. He's been working hard. And also, you don't need any more motivation to get ready than getting a fight with Canelo. You know, what more motivation do you need? You know, and I feel like Canelo, you know, he wants to be a great in the sport, you know, and I respect him a lot for going up to 175. And also what I like about that too is that there's no weight clause, there's no catch weight either. So that could definitely play a big factor. I mean, I don't know how much Canelo's looking to go up, or how much more he's gonna go up after the weigh-in. He's naturally a small guy. Kovalev is a huge guy, so I don't know, man. It's gonna be a great fight. You know, I'm definitely gonna be excited to watch that fight.
Do you think it's fair to compare Canelo's, you know, insistence on moving up to fight Kovalev, essentially two weight classes? Do you think it's fair to compare it to Mikey Garcia's decision earlier this year to move up to fight Errol Spence because he essentially moved up from 135 to 147?
You know, now that you're really that you're talking about it, you know, it really is really similar. You know, I haven't really thought about it like that, but you know, that could be how it plays out. You know, but we can't count Canelo out because you know Canelo's a great fighter, but he hasn't been with a great big fighter. Like, you know, the biggest fighter he's fought was, what's his name? The guy that fought at 68, what's his name? The one he took the belt from?
Rocky Fielding?
Rocky Fielding, and no disrespect, but in reality, Rocky Fielding was not really he was an okay fighter. He didn't have that much power. You know, he's not a Kovalev, in other words. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, man. It's at the end of the day, it's going to be who's willing to push himself to that limit to get that win. You know, I don't even know who's going to win that fight. You know, it's going to be an amazing fight. Like I said, I'm going to be tuning in. I'm excited to watch that fight.
Absolutely. And then, David, you know, besides yourself, of course, who do you think is the second best 168-pounder in the division behind you?
You know, I'm not even going to lie right now. I'm not going to say I'm the best right now because I don't have the world title. Once I have that world title, then I'll give myself the credit and call myself the best. But, you know, I got to be respectful to the sport, too. Mm-hmm. You know, since I don't have the belt, I can't call myself number one. You know, but, you know, you could put Anthony Durrell up there. You could put Caleb Plant up there. You could put Colin Smith up there. All the champions, they all deserve those top spots. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm right behind all the champions. And until I get my belt back, then I can, you know, rearrange the rankings. But, you know, I'm going to be respectful to the sport of boxing. And, you know, I feel like I'm underneath those guys. And that's what keeps me motivated because I'm not going to lie to myself. I'm not going to say that I'm number one and I don't have the belt. You know, until I get the titles, then I'll give myself the proper rankings. But that's what keeps me motivated right now, getting the belts back or getting all these belts and then being the best.
I'm glad you said that, because the reason I phrased it that way is because we've had other guests before who, you know, we ask, like, who's the best at their division, and they say, well, it's me. So I always learn to say, okay, besides you, who's the second best? But you're the first person who's ever been on the show to say, like, oh, no, I'm not the best. Like, I don't have a belt. So, you know, I think
that was basically, you know, you just gotta, it's like being in the NBA, and the team that doesn't have a championship, they're saying that they're the best. You know what I mean? Obviously, I feel like I'm the best, but the rankings say otherwise. You know, I gotta be respectful to the sport of boxing, and until I win all these belts, when I beat Durrell, then, you know, I'll say, like, you know, I'm going to be the best. You know, but until I get the belt back, you know, I'll probably say I'm number four, number five, number four behind all the champions.
Since we were talking about weight, David, we've got a good UK following, and I don't know how many of those fans are gonna, you know, really know who you are. Could you just tell them the story about how you were 250 pounds or something like that when you were 15 years old?
Yeah, when I was 14 years old, you know, I had stopped boxing. I had been boxing my whole life. Then my brother, you know, he had went to Hollywood. I mean, he went to the Wild Card. He was about to sign. You know, he signed a big deal when he was 17. So I was 14, you know what I mean? And I ended up gaining like almost 120 pounds. It was some crazy number. Now I looked at myself in the mirror one day. I'm like, God, man, like, I don't even recognize myself no more. So by the time I get to California, I'm moving my dad. He agreed to let me move in with him. And I tell my dad, you know, I want to lose weight. And then my dad kind of like, you know, it was a look of worry on his face. Like, we don't even know where to start. You know what I mean? But he would never tell me that I couldn't lose weight. That's the thing I always respected about my dad. He always, no matter how hard the situation is, you know, he always said, you know, there's still hope and we could get it done. So I always had faith in my dad. You know what I mean? We got on a diet, you know, we worked extremely hard. And I think in like a year, we lost like about 120 pounds, some crazy number like that. And, you know, I got in good shape. And by the time at 15 years old, I still had 13 years boxing. You know, so I've been boxing since I was 3 years old. So I still had the experience there. So when I got to 15 years old, you know, my dad said, you know what, we lost the weight, let's go on to the next level. And he started putting me with all the professionals, you know, Kelly Pavlik, Kid Chocolate, Gennady Golovkin, you know, then I met up with Zurdo, I met up with a whole bunch of different, you know, world champions. And, you know, that's just basically how we got it started. We went to Mexico, turned pro. And, you know, we've never looked back since. You know, I mean, it's just, it's very hard when you're very overweight. You know, and it, at times it feels like, you know, you're never going to lose weight. You know, and it's not possible. But if anybody, you know, hearing me, you know, that's a little bit overweight right now, you know, just, it's you know, the best things in life aren't easy, you know, so. If you want to do something with your life, you know, you got to dedicate yourself, you know, and not be satisfied until you accomplish your dream or accomplish what you want to accomplish. You know, it's just, nothing is easy in life. You might as well give it your all at any time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, David, you know, we appreciate you taking the time. I know it's fight week for you. Like we said, you're fighting Anthony Durrell for his WBC super middleweight title, which, really quick, do you believe that, are you going into this fight like you never lost it? Because technically you didn't lose it in the ring. Do you still feel like you are the champion?
Yeah, I still feel like I'm the champion. I'm still going in there with a lot of confidence. You don't know, you know what I mean? Even when I got suspended when I was out for a year, you know, I worked my ass off. You know, I was training the whole year. You know, that's why I came back so strong in my last fight, March 16. I'm like, you know, I had to make a statement. So this time, you know, it's on pay-per-view again. No, Anthony Durrell's never been knocked out, so I like to take that challenge. I like to challenge myself, knocking him out. You know, I know it's not going to be easy, but if I want to be the next superstar and I want, you know, I want to become the boxer that everybody, all the fans love to see, you know, I got to challenge myself, and I got to give them the fights that they want to see, and I got to deliver. If I don't knock him out, I'm going to put a beating on him. I can guarantee you that.
Well, on that note, you know, we appreciate your time. Like we said, David, you know, we'll let you get back to your evening tonight. And like I said, you know, you fight this Saturday at the Staples Center in downtown Los Angeles on Fox Pay-Per-View as the co-main event to Sean Porter and Errol Spence Unification Welterweight World Title Clash. And then go ahead and plug your social media, anything you got upcoming. Of course, your fight this Saturday. Go ahead. The floor is yours, man.
Yeah, you could... I just want to tell all the fans, you can follow me at Benavides300. Also, I got merchandise, so if anybody's interested in buying it, it's at www.davidbenavides.shop. I got hats, I got t-shirts, you know, I got hoodies on the way. So, you know, if any of you guys want to wear this to fight night, you know, buy it, you can represent. And I also want to thank you guys for, you know, reaching out to us, me and my father, and, you know, giving us, basically, letting us tell our story. You know, I really appreciate you guys a lot. So thank you so much.
All right, David. Well, good luck this Saturday. You know, good luck in the world title clash against Anthony Durrell. And like I said, thanks a lot for jumping on tonight, man.
All right, yes, sir. Have a good night, guys.
You too. Thank you very much. That's gonna be a good fight, man. Those are that co-main between him and Durrell, and then obviously the Spence Porter. A good fight.
It should be a good fight. I think he'll win. And like we kind of touched on before the show when we were talking about it, he speaks really well. And he also understands the business. He understands it's show business.
For such a young guy, too, he's only 22, right?
22. Mm-hmm.
He's very self-aware of the sport, the business side. He's very self-aware. So, you know.
He understands KOs sell. You know, 21 fights, 18 KOs.
Yeah, he does. So, you know, his team and his dad and all of them, they're doing, you know, collectively, they're all doing a good job over there because you know, that's what you got to do. You got to know how to not just be able to fight and essentially entertain in the ring and do all that stuff, but you have to know how to do the PR side of things and the outside of the ring stuff. I mean, that, you know, that comes with the territory.
Yeah, if you're...
Like Adrian Broner says, at the end of the day...
You really need to stand, you know, the whole aspect because, you know, you could be the best fighter in the world, but if you don't have showmanship outside of the ring or in the ring, unfortunately, you're not going to get the paydays. Like Tyson Fury is kind of boring in the ring.
Whoa.
But he's entertainment outside.
That works. But that works for him.
It does.
You think he knows that?
Yeah.
He's like, okay, I'm going to be entertaining outside the ring because in the ring, I'm more of a boxer.
Because his first time when he was just mainly in Britain and when he beat Klitschko, I think he knew that, you know, he won the title and the British fans didn't really still take to him. Now he seems to know that, you know, showmanship, a lot of talking, you know, it sells.
Well, Well, let's jump into this card as we wrap up the show here. You know, we'll start actually with the Benavidez Darrell fight. Even though we did talk about it with him, of course, it's for the 168-pound WBC super middleweight title that Darrell holds. And like we said during the interview, Benavidez obviously didn't lose it in the ring. You know, he lost it outside of the ring due to some issues he was going on. He had, you know, he acknowledged that he was out for a year suspension.
So he's the lineal WBC.
He's the lineal WBC. I guess, yeah, if you want to twist it like that in some weird form. So I think, did you look at the betting odds for this?
He's a heavy favorite. Benavidez is a heavy favorite.
He is, right?
Going in as challenger. Well, at the end of the day, Anthony Darrell managed to beat Avni Yildirim by a technical split decision to win the title, and Avni Yildirim got smoked by Chris Eubank Jr.
Wasn't that like Minnesota or something?
Yeah, is it Minneapolis?
Yeah, the Armory or something like that?
That's right. A 10th round cut due to a head clash in the 7th. So, you know, he was kind of a title holder, really, just keeping it warm until Benavidez came back.
Man.
Dodged Callum Smith as much as he could. Kept changing the rules, kept changing different things. So Callum Smith eventually went into the World Boxing Super Series because he couldn't get a fight with Darrell. And he's really just holding the title, keeping it warm until Benavidez smokes him on Saturday.
Man.
If you want me to be honest.
Man, don't say that in front of Darrell. He's not going to like you, Mike.
I'm not going to the fight, so he was.
He's not going to like you. But I think, you know, realistically, obviously, Benavidez is the favorite. But I don't know if you caught the face-to-face between them. Like the, you know, Fox's version of a face-off made like HBO. I think, you know, they both had, like, you know, a little chip on their shoulder. Like, you know, obviously, I think it's going to be a great fight. You know, I think that as a co-main, like I mentioned, and then that, obviously, the Spence Porter, I think those are going to be action-packed. And obviously, like Benavidez said during his interview, that he wants to be able to get the KOs. He said in a previous interview that he wants to be able to get the knockouts, because obviously that's what people like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people like blood sport. That's what they like. So I think this fight ends in a knockout. I think seven.
I think Benavidez smokes him. I think he doesn't go six rounds.
Really?
Yeah.
I think seven. You say within six, I say within seven.
Yeah, I think maybe even quicker. Five, six rounds. I think he smokes him. Yeah.
Oof. Well, we'll see. I'm excited, though. That's an intriguing fight, though. And at 22 years old. You know,
I think it's a good setup as well, because I think Benavidez goes in and smokes him. And then I think he walks the walk. So I think he'll try and fight Caleb Plant. I think he would go over and fight Callum Smith. I think he's got a good chance of unifying it. Like you just kind of said, as long as the TV companies don't get in the way and stop the fight.
Yeah, that's why. That would be a cool fight, though. Callum Smith, David Benavidez, a unification matchup. That'd be an awesome fight.
The one before that, though, Caleb Plant, that it would be.
No, yeah, that'd be cool too.
With the beef between him and his brother.
No, yeah, obviously that'd be a great fight too. But I was thinking about in terms of like followings.
Mm-hmm.
Benavidez is obviously Mexican American. Callum Smith is, you know, English. You know, imagine Benavidez traveling to the UK for that fight.
I think that's one of the we'd see twice. I think we'd see it in England, and then we'd probably see it again out here.
Maybe LA. Honestly,
because they're both title holders.
Yeah.
And Callum Smith, I believe, is actually the Ring magazine holder, I think.
Lineal?
Would be. So then I think we could see that in Liverpool and then back over in SoCal.
Right. And then going to the main event, like we said, this Saturday, the Staples Center, Fox Pay-Per-View. Errol Spence Jr., the IBF welterweight world champion, 25-0, goes up against Sean Showtime Porter. We got another Showtime, I told you. Chris Colbert is Showtime, but Showtime Sean Porter was there first. Sean Porter has a WBC World Welterweight title. Unification matchup. I know people are saying Spence, Spence, Spence. There's nothing wrong with that, obviously. Any man. Leaning towards Porter here.
Nah, here we go. Yeah, it's the underdog.
Coming back.
It's coming back.
It's coming back. I am. I'm leaning towards Porter here.
Do you think that Kenny, because he was in the corner a few times during Spence's amateur career, because he keeps saying he's
that's,
like,
we talked about that before we came on air. Like that.
He keeps saying, he goes, I know how he thinks. You know, he seems to think that he knows Spence better than Spence knows Spence. If you can follow that.
You better say that 10 times fast. You're right, though. I think that's an X factor.
You think
that
so?
Kenny Porter obviously was, you know, in his corner, has been able to see the, him, how he acts in the corner. You know, that's, I mean, who else that Spence has fought has the experience like that,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I mean, if you look at it on paper, obviously, Porter has fought the better opposition in right. terms of world class. I mean, I don't think you can argue that. It's not to say that Spence isn't world class. I mean, he is. But in terms of, you know, opposition across the ring, Porter has fought Danny Garcia, Keith Thurman,
Kell Brook, Broner,
Ugas. He just fought Ugas earlier this
Lost
year.
Lost to Ugas, actually.
Yeah. You and a lot of people think that, but that was a tough fight, though. Spence has fought. He just fought Mikey. Kell Brook. So they have an opponent in common in Kell Brook. So. I mean, I don't know.
What do you think about the common opponent then? Porter lost to Kell Brook. Spence battered Kell Brook.
But they fought him at different times.
Okay.
Porter lost a hard-fought decision.
Mm-hmm.
Kell Brook had not fought Triple G yet, and he had not fought Spence, obviously. Spence, I'm not trying to take away from Spence's win, because Spence went over to the UK and took his belt. Brook at that time was still had some pop. Because Kell Brook still got his shots in that Spence fight. I think he still did good.
Kell Brook, if I remember, was ahead on a few cards.
It was entertaining.
Before the injury.
It was entertaining. So I think that was still a good fight. But you can't tell me that realistically, Kell Brook, if he would have fought Spence before he fought Triple G, that could have been a whole different fight.
No, I agree. I think it could have been, because I'm sure having your eye socket, you know, smashed in by Triple G, it's going to affect you, you know, subconsciously, you know, going into fights. You may think that you're 100%, but I'm sure it's something that, you know, you're going to always have in the back of your mind. You know, so when you're getting punched in your face again, he's never really been the same since both of those. I think affect him.
No, absolutely. I think he knows that too. I think he'd be the first one to tell you that. Like, but, you know, I think, yeah, they have a common opponent, but they fought the same guy at different points of the guy's career.
Do you think this will be Errol Spence's coming out party?
I think it should. I think people say that the Mikey one was his coming out party because it was a Fox pay-per-view, first pay-per-view, Cowboy Stadium. It was obviously a big fight. I mean, who knows? But this should be the coming out party. If he can, look, it's a coming out party as big as it can get if he knocks out Porter or he stops Porter, because Porter's never been stopped.
He's only been dropped once.
He's been dropped by Broner.
Yeah, once.
Out of everybody, he's been dropped by Broner, and he actually won that fight, but he was dropped by Broner, like in one of the final rounds. But if Spence can actually stop Porter, Porter's obviously got a chin. He's rugged. He's tough. He comes in like a football player. You know, he's had troubles with like headbutts and stuff like that. He's like in your face. He's like one of the toughest fighters in terms of like overwhelming you, like to fight in the whole sport. Which, you know, just adds another layer to his skill, because you have to deal with that. If Spence, I mean, and this goes vice versa. If Spence can knock out Porter or stop him, that's ridiculous. That definitely puts them like, okay, that's coming out party. But if Porter can stop Spence, if there's any stoppage, like I said, on any side, that's huge. That is huge. But I honestly think it's going to get to the point where Spence, even though he has said in previous interviews that he wants to knock him out, he wants to stop him, I'm not saying that he's not going to try, but I think he's going to see that Porter's obviously tough, rugged. He's obviously a world-class world champion, and he's going to revert to his boxing skills like he did with Mikey. It's not to say Mikey's the same as Porter, and Mikey doesn't have the same pop as Porter, obviously, but I think Spence is going to realize, like, okay, like, this guy can't, I can't knock this guy out because he's obviously ridiculously tough. So he's going to try to box him like he boxed Mikey and try to win on the card. I mean, either guy already, they have chin.
What do you think Porter's going to do? Because in my mind, I think the rough, rugged football type of Sean Porter that you mentioned would be his best way to go about it. But in a previous interview I listened to this week, he was saying about, you know, he's going to affect Errol Spence mentally, you know, when he can't land the punches that he thinks he can land. So to me, that makes it sound like he's going to go for a boxing type of Sean Porter, but he tried to box Ugas, and I think 90% of the people thought he lost that. And I don't think standing on the outside...
Those Cuban fighters, man.
Exactly, and then standing on the outside, because Sean Porter has little T-Rex-like arms, you know, he's not going to be able to stand on the outside and box Spence, in my opinion.
It's a tough fight, though, man.
I think fighting him on his chest, like he does to everybody else.
That's a tough fight. That's a tough fight. I understand people picking Spence and stuff like that. Like, I'm not saying that's wrong, but Porter has fought tougher opposition. Like, that's a tough fight.
On his chest, though? You think he gets in there, head down, fights on his chest? He can't fight him from the outside.
This is a tough fight.
Who are you picking?
Picking Porter.
I think Spence.
Picking Porter. And I don't want to go too far in saying how, because I don't know, but I'm picking Porter.
I think Spence, and I think that Sean Porter's that rugged. I think he makes it to the end, and I think we have a Mikey Garcia, like a 10-round, two, unanimous decision to Spence. And I think he comes, if he stops him, though, man, like you said.
I'm excited for this.
If he stops him, that's a big, big statement to make.
Either stoppage on either side is huge, regardless. Regardless.
And before we sign off, how many pay-per-views?
Oh, good ending right there. What did Mikey Spence do? 350?
325, I think.
Somewhere around there? I think it does less than that.
I think
it does 2 to 250. Between there.
That's the range I was going to
pick. You can still pick it.
Yeah, I agree. I think because, you know, the Amir Khan was 150,000. Yeah. I think it does slightly more than that because of Benavidez.
I think it's going to do more than that.
I think Benavidez draws.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think Benavidez is going to help draw, obviously.
I think 2 to 250, I agree.
Yeah. I'll say 215. 220. I'll say 220. But I don't think it's going to do more than Mikey spent. Because Mikey drew a lot right there.
I think 2 to 2. Yeah. 200 to 250.
I don't know. On that note, thank you for listening to this week's episode 49 of The Last Round. We'd like to thank David Benavidez, who fights this Saturday, as we said, on Fox pay-per-view against Anthony Durrell for the WBC Super Middleweight World Title. We'd like to thank him for taking the time out of his night and out of fight week, actually. It's fight week for him, for taking the time to jump on and talk to us for a few minutes. Mike, tell the listeners where to follow us.
So we're at The Last Round 12 on Twitter and Instagram. And join us next week for the more fight reviews and previews.
Check us out next week. Once again, I'm Danny Z. For my co-host, Michael Shepard, this is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.